time for the Bay Area's favorite radio quiz show, Minds Over Matter. Your moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is joined this week by technical editor, Kira Pace, and educator, Lori Fisher. And here's your host, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, David, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you are having a lovely holiday weekend. Happy 4th of July. I know it's not until Tuesday, but I'll wish you happy 4th of July right now. Our country's birthday. So, anyway, if you'd like to settle back and give us an hour of your time tonight, you can feel free to do that, because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we are welcoming your participation. That's very, very important. Feel free to do just that. That is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that is area code 415-841-4134. Also, we have a toll-free number. Yes, we really do. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. We'll be giving you questions on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, just about everything else. Again, 866-798-8255 or 415-841-4134. Just to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter, MINDSOVERMATTER, at yahoo.com. So we don't read the emails during the show. It's too much trouble, but we do read them. So mindsovermatter at yahoo.com. If you'd like to hear the show online, you can certainly do that anywhere in the world, you know, provided you have a smartphone or a computer, at kalw.org. That is kalw.org. And a podcast of the show should be available in a reasonably concise time after our show tonight, also at kalw.org. Okay. All that being said, we will start with the round of introductions and get those calls in as soon as you can. Sometimes it does get a little bit crowded, but get those calls in and we will take your call as soon as we can. Okay. Here's the first. Kira Pace reminds you that just because you can set off fireworks 24 hours a day, it doesn't mean you should set off fireworks 24 hours a day.
We have so many people in our neighborhood who are wasting their fireworks at like 3 in the afternoon. Well, yeah. I don't even know what you're seeing at 3 in the afternoon.
We get that in Alameda too. Yeah. One of our dogs could care less, the other one bothers.
Couldn't
bothers
care less. One could and one couldn't.
Both.
So Lori Fisher is pleased to announce that he has never been accused of being a dandy, Yankee Doodle or otherwise, even by those who know him best.
It's true. It's on my bucket list, and our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is coiled and ready for action, but he will settle for an hour of laid-back radio.
Yes, I usually do. Anyway, all that being said, we will start with Kira Pace.
All right. So, there are 7 colleges and universities that have had in attendance more than one U.S. president. What are they?
Harvard.
Harvard is the has had the most U.S. presidents with 8.
Yale.
Yale also has had several presidents. It's had 5.
How about Stanford?
No.
Oh.
I think there's only one that went there, maybe. Vancouver went there. And, okay, University of Virginia.
Nope.
William and Mary.
Yes, William and Mary's had 3.
All right.
Is that where George went? George Washington?
No. He didn't go to college.
Okay, so we have Harvard, Yale, and William and Mary, and we're looking for a total of 7?
It's a total of 7.
Well, how about, it's a long shot, how about University of Michigan?
No, we had Gerald Ford. Yeah, I say we because that's my alma mater.
Oh, that's right.
But we had James Earl Jones, which should count, but somehow does not.
Really?
Yeah,
that's a little shocking.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, you had Darth Vader. Oh no, he was.
He was.
The voice,
he was the voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah. All right.
Let's see. Let me think about this for a minute. So, not Penn, but Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Columbia's had three.
All right. All right.
I'll going down the Ivy League.
Yeah.
Are there more Ivy Leagues, or should we get off out of the Ivy League?
There's one more Ivy League. Right. I think it's Ivy League.
All right.
Someone in the audience suggested it's Princeton.
Yes, the studio audience, as always, is
they're never
on
wrong.
Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson, and who else?
James Madison.
Yeah. James Madison was the first graduate student at Princeton.
Really?
Yes. I meant to ask that someday, but it just came up, so I'll
You'll ask it another day.
I probably will. Yes.
I look forward to forgetting that fact someday soon.
Okay. Why don't you repeat the question, Karen? Mm-hmm.
Sorry. There are seven colleges and universities that have had in attendance more than one U.S. president. What are they? And we already have Harvard, the College of William and Mary, Yale University, Columbia University, and Princeton University. Looking for two more.
Okay. And Lori, why don't you go ahead, too?
All right. I have a question based on a little quirky law that was passed in California that is now being referred to as the Mark Hamill Law. So I have four things that are named after people, and I want to know what they are. One is, what's the Mark Hamill Law? Two is, what is the Bechdel test, named after Alison Bechdel, the graphic writer? And Kara's already lit up twice, so I won't let her have more than that. One is what I'm calling the Peggy Lee Rule. It was also called the Peggy Lee Law Case. And the fourth one is the Pocahontas Exception. So I'm looking for the Mark Hamill Rule, the Bechdel Test, the Peggy Lee Rule, and the Pocahontas Exception. I'd like to give you one each, but it looks like you're chomping away. So, Kara.
Kara, go ahead.
The Bechdel Test.
Yeah.
That is, does a film have two women that have a conversation with each other that's not about men?
That is correct. And that means it passes the Bechdel test. And then a corollary is, are those women apparently given names for themselves? Apparently there's corollary. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right?
The Peggy Lee, that's about the copyright. Something to do with the song she wrote for Lady and the Tramp that she did not receive royalties or enough or sufficient royalties for or credit for those songs.
You're in the right department, but you need to be. It wasn't simply that she didn't get paid sufficiently for the songs. It was something that occurred that led to her lawsuit. She was paid plenty.
Is it something to do with the reissue of the movie?
Yes.
And the royalties from the reissue?
Yeah. So the Peggy Lee lawsuit was about she was paid, and then it said that that it couldn't be transcribed in any other way, and when the videotapes hadn't been invented.
Right,
when videotapes came out, she said, "Don't I get a share?" And they said, "Oh, this is not a transcription of your songs, and this is not like us putting out an album or showing it at the movies again. You've already been paid for that."
Okay.
And they made over $90 million on the videotapes.
Right.
And she said she wanted a share. So now people who write, kind of like they even have a rule that anything we haven't figured out yet, you get paid for, like MP3s, you know, that any electronic thing, the people who write it get credit. So that is the Peggy Lee Rule.
Okay.
Give yourself a bell.
So the other two,
Mark Hamill Law and the Pocahontas Exception.
Okay. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi there. It's Tom and Soma.
Hi, Tom.
Hello. Had a couple of questions and one guess at one of your answers.
Okay.
On the president's colleges, how about New York University?
Nope.
Okay. And then I have two questions related to Independence Day.
All right. Good.
And the Declaration of Independence. So I was looking at the 56 signers and looking at which first names and last names occur most frequently. And it turns out that there are four first names that occur six times each among the 56 signers.
How about James? I'll go with James first.
No.
Oh.
John?
Yeah.
Yes.
Obadiah?
Yeah.
What about William?
William's good.
Yes.
And so you're looking for the first and the last names that appear?
Right now, just the first names that occur most frequently. So there's four first names that occur six times among the 56 signers.
Does anybody say William?
Yeah,
yes.
I did.
We have John and William.
What about George?
Yes.
Very good.
I'll take a shot at Benjamin.
No, there are three Benjamins.
Yeah.
What about Joseph?
Nope.
Okay.
There's only one Button, I know that. Button Gwinnett. Let's see. Roger?
One Roger.
Roger Sherman.
Just one.
Okay. So we've got John, James, William.
George, and William.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the ones we've guessed so far.
We've guessed Roger, Benjamin, Joseph, and James. Those are all wrong. And then John, William, and George are all correct.
Okay.
Are we missing a Beetle? Is Paul in there? Is it Paul?
Paul. The Beetles occurred to me. Did we guess Robert?
No Ringos.
And somebody just, let me say Thomas.
Oh, not yet. Yet.
Okay. Robert, there were two, and you're correct on Thomas.
Okay.
So we have four of the six.
Great. You got them. You got all four.
Oh, great. Okay, great.
Ooh.
And then the other question is surnames. So the most commonly occurring surnames occur just two times each. So there's three last names that occur two times each.
Aren't there two Morrises?
Pardon?
Aren't there two Morrises?
Yes.
Yes. Roger Morris.
Lewis and Robert Morris.
Robert Morris, I'm sorry.
Give yourself a bell on that.
And Carol. I know there's William Carroll or Carol of Carrollton.
Carol of Carrollton.
How about Adams?
Yes.
There we go.
Good. Great.
All right. Very nice.
Just one left then.
I'll just guess Lucky Johnson.
No.
Nope.
Sherman?
Adams was John and Samuel, by the way.
Sherman? There's at least one Sherman. Roger Sherman. Okay. Only one Hancock, one Franklin.
I can give you a hint if you
go ahead.
If you want one.
Go ahead.
Okay, the hint is on the place I was looking at the names, both of the Lees. Oh, that was good. Okay.
Would it be Lee?
Yeah.
Richard.
Sorry.
Richard Henry Lee is one.
Richard Henry, yeah, and who's the other Lee?
Oh, not Light Horse Harry. Peggy.
Pinky, I believe it was Pinky.
the hint was going to be that both of these folks are. Named with two names. So, in other words, there's three names. Something, something.
Lee.
Richard Henry and who's the other one?
I don't know.
I know that. Is it Richard Henry that is the father of Robert E. Lee or the grandfather?
Oh, that I don't know. But I think it is.
No, I can't think of the other one.
Okay. Ready?
What's that?
Would you like to hear the answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Francis Lightfoot Lee.
Lightfoot. All right. I went to high school with Claire Witherspoon, who was a direct descendant of John Witherspoon.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So that's my one connection to the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
No, that's all I have.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Happy Independence Day weekend. Feel free to give us a call with a question or answer. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134, 841-4134. That's area code 415. Or toll free 866-798-8255. Okay, let me do a couple questions here. All right. And in Louisiana, is the only U.S. county / parish, I know they call them parishes there, in Louisiana is the only U.S. county / parish to be named after the title character of a poem. What is the poem? And, of course, if you know the poem, you'll know the author of the poem. It's a famous poem.
Is it Ozymandias Parish?
No.
No? Okay.
No. Nope.
Then I might be out.
Not the Ancient Mariner. And so, in Louisiana, it's the only parish or county to be named after the title character of a famous poem.
And is the poem associated with Louisiana in some ways?
I haven't read the poem in such a long time but I don't think so. I don't think so.
And is it the first and last name, like a Richard Corey? Or
no, it's just one name.
Yeah. Oh, so not even a first and middle, like Annabelle Lee or?
Yeah, no, okay. Just the first name.
Hmm.
Can we get a hint from our audience? Somebody in the audience is guessing Hiawatha.
No.
Okay, that's it.
Not Hiawatha. All right, so in Louisiana is the only county in the U.S. / parish to be named after the title character of a poem, a famous poem.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's fun.
What is the poem? And...
Ooh, what about St. Nick?
Nope. Nope.
I don't know that there's a St. Nick poem, is there?
Well, no, the night before Christmas is called something, I don't even remember.
That's a visit from St. Nicholas.
There you go. Yeah.
But no.
No. And the entire name of the poem is the name of this character, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Second question. What is the best-selling book of all time in which the lead character dies?
The Bible.
The Bible.
No, it's a fiction book.
We'll let that go. The best
Jesus didn't really die.
All right, we'll just
remember,
let
he came back
go.
After a couple days.
All right.
Okay, so the
he had a long weekend.
We just gonna let that one go.
Yeah.
I think.
Right, so this is the best selling fictional work which lead character dies.
Yes.
Huh.
Wow.
You know this? Okay. All right. So, what is the best selling fictional work of all time in which the lead character dies? And don't say the Bible.
And it's a novel, not a play, correct?
It is a novel, not a play.
Is it British?
It is written in English. I will give you that.
All right.
And let's go to a call.
All the main characters die.
Oh, wait.
And everything. Go ahead.
No.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is Gareth from Hayward.
Hi, Gareth.
You know, you're talking about those rules. Have any of you ever heard of the Jerry Jones rule?
Jerry Jones. The guy who owns the Cowboys?
Yeah, you know how it was implemented, don't you?
I don't know what it was. What's the rule?
Well, it was implemented. What happened was when he fired Tom Landry, Pete Rozelle found out the sale was not officially approved by the other NFL owners.
Oh, so that's the Jerry Jones rule? You can forbid a sale? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I got a couple questions.
All right, go ahead.
Which star of Hogan's Heroes was Eddie Cantor's son-in-law?
Which star of Hogan's Heroes was Eddie Cantor's son-in-law? Okay. Let me think about this for a second. Was it Robert Clary?
You have yourself a bow.
All right.
Oh, no, that's very good. Yeah.
Well, Robert Clary was Jewish, or is Jewish. He's still alive.
Yeah.
And he's an Auschwitz survivor as well.
In real life. Wow.
So yeah.
That's good logic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Here's my second question.
Yes.
Which one of the Marx brothers had a son who was adopted?
For some reason, I'm going to say Harpo.
Yep. Give yourself a bell.
Yeah.
It was Bill Marx.
Okay.
I think all his kids weren't all his kids adopted.
Yeah, all of Marx. I was going to say I was the only one that came to mind. But by the way, did you hear that Mom Grotto's daughter Miriam just died?
Oh, I didn't know. Sorry.
Yeah, 90 years old.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Gareth.
Yeah.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, this is Herb from Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, Herb.
Last week you had a question about the origin of the word drag, and it turned out to be an acronym.
Right.
Now, I'm going to ask you, I don't mean any disrespect for this question, but what is the origin of the word fag?
Fed?
Fag, F-A-G.
As in bundle of sticks?
Yeah.
No, well, but so it's actually a different word.
Not faggot. Faggot's a stick.
Well, faggot is literally a bundle of sticks.
Yeah.
And how it came to mean fascism, I have no idea. Somebody can answer that. Anyway, I'll give you a clue. It came from another language.
So, but the word the origin of the word you're looking for is F-A-G?
F-A-G.
F-A-G.
Is it a Germanic word, I guess?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it fagula?
Yes.
Yeah, from Yiddish or Hebrew.
For a day?
Yeah.
For
homosexual.
Pejorative.
Yeah, it's definitely pejorative. It's Yiddish.
Yeah. I guess it's better known than I thought. It's a Yiddish word.
Yeah, our studio audience knew that.
The most common I've seen is Feigl, F-A-I-G-L.
Oh.
Which
somehow became
fag.
All right.
I heard Fagala when I was a kid.
Leo Rosten has this great book, The Joys of Yiddish.
Right, sure.
And he's got it listed in there with the more elaborate spelling, F-A-Y-G-E-L-E-H. The same word. Anyway, so that's the answer. Fag is a Yiddish word.
Right. Thank you very much.
And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Herb. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're having a lovely holiday weekend. Our panel tonight, Kira Pace, technical editor, Laurie Fisher, professor emeritus, Diablo Valley College. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez, and you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW, your local public radio station. And Laurie, it is your turn.
I think it's Kira's turn. Isn't it?
No. Oh, I thought you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry. Kira, go ahead.
That's okay.
I saw a look on her face.
All right. How dare you?
Oh, I think that look is just me trying to come up with the names of poems.
Okay. yeah, me too.
All right, so I have handouts. There you go. Handout. All right. List of deathbed quotes. So I have some deathbed quotes for you, and you tell me who purportedly said these on their deathbeds, these words. So I have, "Tomorrow at sunrise, I will no longer be here. A certain butterfly is already on the wing. Pardonnez-moi, monsieur. Mozart! This is no way to live. Goodbye, kid. Hurry back. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I love you very much, my dear beaver. And finally, behold, O monks, this is my advice to you. All component things in the world are changeable. They are not lasting. Work hard to gain your own salvation."
Not brief on the last one. He had a long last breath. Well, I know none of them.
I'll guess on Mozart. Is that Salieri? Salieri?
No.
That's a good guess.
It is a good guess, especially based on the movie.
Is it Beethoven then?
No. A composer.
It is a composer.
Yes.
Is it a rough contemporary of Mozart?
I don't think so, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
I'm no Josh Kosman. Sorry.
Goodbye, kid. Hurry back.
I've seen Oh, Wow, Wow, Wow.
I wish I could do impressions.
Is that Humphrey Bogart?
It is Humphrey Bogart. Yes, absolutely. All right.
Oh, the goodbye kid?
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Oh, let's see.
I suspect our our literary studio audience has a guess for
all right. Well, you better go through the list again.
Sure. "Tomorrow at sunrise, I will no longer be here. A certain butterfly is already on the wing. Pardonnez-moi, monsieur. Mozart. This is no way to live. Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow. I love you very much, my dear beaver. And finally, behold, O monks, this is my advice to you. All component things in the world are changeable. They are not lasting. Work hard to gain your own salvation."
And like the goodbye kid, are some of them have words in them that would lead to us?
Yes.
Okay. How about the beaver one?
There we go. There's our... Yes, the beaver one is one that would lead you.
Okay. Hugh Beaumont.
David gets Barbara Billingsley. Is the last one a brother or a monk?
Yes.
Who, but an author, how about St. Francis?
No, you're gonna want to look a lot earlier than that.
Oh.
But you are on the right track.
All right. Okay, think about that. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Bob from Coal Valley.
Hi, Bob.
I had a couple of possible answers for a college that your presidents went to. How about West Point?
Oh, very good.
Right track, but wrong. Wait, actually, no, it is West Point. No, you know what? I'm terrible at this. I'm sorry.
It should be. Yeah.
It's U.S. Military Academy at West Point. Sorry. I'm so bad at military stuff. Yes, you are correct.
Great. That'd be Grant and Eisenhower and a bunch of...
Right.
Grant and Eisenhower are the only two U.S. presidents. Oh. But yes, you are correct.
Right. And the parish in Louisiana named after main character in a poem, is that Evangeline?
It is Evangeline. Very good. Excellent.
Very nice. That's great.
Then I have a question for you guys, which is the famous quote from Thomas Jefferson about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence was modified from a phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of property.
It was.
What phrase was that?
I read that recently.
Say it again. What's the question?
So whose phrase was it who wrote life, liberty, and the pursuit of property?
Well, it's the Committee of Five, so it's Jefferson, Franklin, Adams.
Before them. This was written almost 100 years before the Declaration.
Oh, it was a philosopher.
Okay. Pursuit of property. Somebody writing in English?
Yes.
So
the famous political scientist.
Oh.
In the 1600s.
Political scientist?
In the 17th century.
Yeah, writing in English.
All right, let me think just for a sec. Not Hume. Political scientist.
I don't know.
No, we don't know.
John Locke.
Okay.
Oh, John.
All right.
Yep.
Very good.
Thanks, guys. Great show. Really love it.
Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And Lori.
All right. Last time I was on, I asked a question about the American Museum of Writers, brand new museum in Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's another brand new museum that opened in Sweden that is the Museum of Failure. It's a serious
museum. I heard about that.
Celebrating failure. Yeah. So on the initial exhibits, I'm going to give you the name of five famous corporations, and this is a product that they invented that's considered a failure. And I think one of the points of the museum is not to make fun of these, but that they led to really interesting other things. So here are the companies. Okay, the first one is Sony. Second one is Harley-Davidson. The third one is Coca-Cola, and it's not the new Coke, which is what I thought it would be. It's a flavor of Coke that they tried. Colgate and Apple. So Sony, Harley-Davidson, Coca-Cola, Colgate, and Apple are all represented with a product that they pushed and loved, and it was a failure, and that's what I'm asking.
Was Sony, does the Betamax count as a failure?
It does, and it was, and that's the right answer.
It was beautiful. We had a Betamax growing up, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, and then you still have it, right?
I think
that's the failure part.
Right next to the 8-track.
Yeah, well, I think that was the Beta and VHS for the two competitions, and even VHS.
If I recall, the Harley-Davidson, that's their Harley-Davidson perfume or fragrance, men's fragrance.
That is unbelievably correct.
Yeah.
Very good.
And then was the Apple Newton?
It was.
All right.
Oh, very good.
These are, okay. So we're looking for Colgate and a flavor of Coca-Cola.
Okay. Wasn't there a... No, it wasn't that. Was there a green Coke?
I think there was. And shockingly, that's not the one.
Oh, you mean Coca-Cola Life or whatever?
Yeah.
No, I think there was a green colored
Coke. Oh, it was actually green colored?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I believe there was. It might have been lime flavored.
But that's not what you're looking for.
That's not celebrated as the big failure that I'm looking for.
Okay.
So I'm looking for Coca-Cola and Colgate.
All right. I'm going to give you six Shakespeare mothers in Shakespeare plays. And there aren't really a lot of mother figures in Shakespeare plays because there weren't women to play the roles. They weren't actresses really on the stage at the time. Most of the women's roles had to be played by men. So some of these are barely seen or talked about rather than seen. So all I want you to do is identify the play. So these are mothers from Shakespeare plays. And I will spell them out for you. The first one is Sycorax. It's S-Y-C-O-R-A-X. S-Y-C-O-R-A-X. Sycorax. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. Number two is Volumnia. V-O-L-U-M-N-I-A, Volumnia. Number three is Gertrude. I'm sure you'll get that, Gertrude and Heathcliff. And number four, Hermione. Number five, Thaisia, T-H-A-I-S-A. And number six is Cecily Neville. So again, these are mothers in Shakespeare plays. I want you to identify the play that they come from. Number one is Sycorax. Number two, Volumnia. Number three, Gertrude. Number four, Hermione. Number five, Thaisia. Number six, Cecily Neville. I'll give you each one guess.
Cecily Neville sounds like the importance of being earnest.
It does a little bit. Not.
Well, Gertrude is Hamlet's mother.
Of course.
Yeah. So that was
very good.
The lowest hanging fruit possible.
I'm only tall enough. I'm only tall enough for that low hanging fruit.
I should know Hermione.
Nope.
All right.
Is that Julius Caesar, maybe?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not one of the histories. So.
Okay.
All right. Leave that out, and let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there? Sorry about that. Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Janine from West Portal.
Hi, Janine.
Hi, and I was going to say Evangeline, but the other gentleman got it before me while I was on hold.
There you go. There's your bill.
Thank you. It's by Longfellow.
Yes. Excellent.
And then on the deathbed, the oh well, oh well, oh well, is that Steve Jobs?
Yep.
Oh.
Rather, yep, okay. Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Nice. Good for you.
So, okay. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
And we're about halfway through the show, so let's repeat any questions that have not been answered yet, Kira.
Okay, I have some deathbed quotes. They are, "Tomorrow at sunrise, I will no longer be here. A certain butterfly is already on the wing. Pardonnez-moi, monsieur. Mozart. This is no way to live. I love you very much, my dear beaver. And behold, O monks, this is my advice to you. All component things in the world are changeable. They are not lasting. Work hard to gain your own salvation." I am also looking for the last of the seven colleges and universities that have had in their attendance more than one U.S. president. We've already had Harvard, College of William and Mary, West Point, U.S. Military Academy, Yale, Columbia, and Princeton. There is one more.
All right. More than one president.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any public schools in there? I mean, you know, non-private universities.
Right.
We guessed Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
and
not
I was
it.
Wrong.
Okay.
No, I believe this last one is private.
Okay.
Diablo Valley College? No. We just had one.
University of Chicago?
No.
Okay. And Laurie, yes.
Let's see. I'm looking for rules named after two people. We got Bechtel test and the Peggy Lee rule. I'm looking for the Mark Hamill law and the Pocahontas exception. And then the Museum of Failure. The panel identified Sony, Harley Davidson, and Apple, but we still need the Coca-Cola flavor that was considered a failure and what Colgate made. That's the surprising one that did not do well in the marketplace.
Colgate. The Mark Hamill law, does it have anything to do with his voiceover work?
It does not.
Okay. All right.
It has something to do with his work, kind of.
Yeah.
Anything to do with his being injured in a car crash and anything resulting from that?
I'm going to say no. It might tangentially. It's not part of the story. It might have something to do with his motivation and having legislation passed, but it wasn't a safety thing.
Okay.
And does it have anything to do with action figures?
It does.
Likenesses on action figures?
And I'm going to say yes, and more than that, too.
Okay. I guess receiving payment for being the likeness of an action figure, like royalties on...
You've stepped into the right room, but that isn't it. It's not about likeness per se.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it for the caller.
Yeah, they'll be
sure
on
somebody.
It. Yeah.
And let's see. What is the best-selling book of all time, not the Bible, fiction, novel, best-selling novel of all time, in which the lead character dies.
So it's not necessarily the title character, it's just a lead character.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
It's a book we've all read, you think? It's one of those kind of books?
I can't testify to that, but it's quite possible.
Yeah, they die. The lead character dies in a lot of books.
And let's see. I gave you the mothers of in Shakespeare plays. You just identify the play. The ones we have left are Sycorax, S-Y-C-O-R-A-X, Volumnia, Hermione, Thasia, and Cecily Neville. So,
what about A Tale of Two Cities?
I thought of that. Is that it? That's a great guess.
That is correct.
Oh, very nice.
Sydney Carton. Very, nice. Very good.
Oh, that's good.
Very good. Yes.
All right. I feel much better about not knowing any of these Shakespearean numbers.
He's in a far, far better place. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is that me?
It is you.
Hi, this is Linda Nelsarito.
Hi, Linda.
Okay, first of all, I wanted to give the mother, Volumnia, was in Coriolanus.
That's correct. Excellent.
Nice.
Okay. The other one I'm going to make a stab at, Sycorax. Is that the Tempest?
It is. And whose mother is Sycorax?
Oh, is it Caliban?
It is Caliban.
Nice.
Oh, very
work.
Good.
Whew. Nice work.
It's been a long time. I have a literature question for you guys. Okay, there is a very interesting... Well, let me start out with saying Elmer Leonard has written a book called 10 Books of Writing, 10 Rules of Writing. And one of his rules is... You are not allowed to use more than 3 or 4 exclamation points per 100,000 words, which I have violated so many times, I can't count them. But it's an interesting rule. So a kind of tech-minded writer has studied 50 great works of literature and counted for these 50 authors how many exclamation points they used. And so I have a list of the top 5 in following this rule and the bottom 5 for violating it. So I'd like you to tell me who these authors are.
So who uses the most and least number of exclamation points?
So it's hard not knowing the 50, like the random 50.
Yeah, I know.
Are these American authors?
They're mixed. Yeah. So can we start with the top 5 of following the rules?
You know, Shakespeare actually uses a lot of exclamation points because he still uses them after commands.
I don't think he was one of the authors.
Okay. Yeah, I guess he's a playwright anyway.
I've seen something about, are they all 20th century authors?
Mostly.
Okay. Okay, how about Elmore Leonard?
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good. He followed his own rule. He was numero uno.
All right. Yeah, I'm hanging that one up.
Very good.
How about Hemingway not using
them? Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. You're 2 for 2. He's number 2.
All right. Give him a bell on that one.
Yes. Yeah. How about Faulkner?
I'm not sure he's on this. I don't have the whole list, but he's not either the top 5 or the bottom 5.
Or Harper Lee?
She's not in either group either.
Right. Steinbeck?
I don't see him.
Okay.
It's tough.
It's very tough.
What about
the top ones are women?
Oh, 2 of them?
And 1 is a foreigner and not a woman.
Okay. Well, I was going to guess Dan Brown. He seems like an exclamation-filled
fella. Yeah, I'm not sure he was considered a good enough author to include her.
Okay, and what about like J.K. Rowling?
Not included, I don't think.
All right.
Well, I remember Willa Cather has "Oh, Pioneers" has an exclamation point in the title.
Yeah, that should count against her, I would think. I don't see her on the list either.
Yeah, you better fill it in because it's too hard to guess not knowing who the 50 authors are.
For the top 5, number 3 is Toni Morrison. Mm. Number 4 is Salman Rushdie, and number 5 is Virginia Woolf. And so for the worst ones, why don't you just give me whichever ones you can think of the.
Well, how about J.D. Salinger for using them?
No, I don't see him.
Right. Holden Caulfield had a lot of them.
There's one that I consider very polysyllabic. Who's the worst?
Nabokov.
No, it's funny because the name of the book that gives this study is called. Nabokov's favorite word is mauve. What the numbers reveal about the classics, bestsellers, and our own writing. And the author is Ben Blatt. It sounds really interesting. He also takes up adverbs, cliches, and various other things.
Ooh, what about Kurt Vonnegut?
I don't. He's not on my list.
Okay. I don't think he would be a lot. Use a lot. He was the one who banned the semicolon.
Hated the semicolon. Yeah, I think proof doesn't. That you went to college, that's all it is.
Oh, Linda, you better fill it in first.
Okay. All right. The worst one is James Joyce. Oh. And then close behind, Tom Wolfe. And then there's quite a drop in numbers of exclamation points, but then it goes to Jane Austen, F. Scott Fitzgerald, of all people, and then E.L. James.
Uh-oh.
So, anyway, it sounds like a really fun book to dip into.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
And let's see. It is, I think, your turn here.
Okay. Let's see. All right. I've got a couple just sort of travel-y type questions for you, things you might see. So for nearly eight centuries, Poland's Wieliczka mine produced what substance? Tours of the mine reveal an underground city whose galleries, chapels, and even furnishings are composed of the substance.
It's in the 8th century, is that what you said?
It's been worked for the past eight centuries.
I know they have
some
very big salt mines there. Is it salt?
It is salt. That's okay. Absolutely correct. Right. It is the salt area of the world, or a salt area. And Australia's oldest synagogue is in what territorial capital city?
How about Hobart?
That's exactly right.
Tasmania.
Yep, the oldest synagogue is in Tasmania.
Yeah.
Or as the Australians say, Tasmania.
Synagogue.
Is that it? Any more?
I have another one.
All right, give
like
us
one.
Another question.
Okay, one more. What businessman, inventor, and former president of General Motors, among other companies, purchased Longwood Gardens in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, mainly to save its trees? In his nearly 50 years of residency there, he designed several of the gardens, fountains, and buildings that make it an attraction today.
About Alfred P. Sloan?
No.
Did you say General Motors?
I did say General Motors.
Okay.
This is pretty far back that he was a president of General Motors, but he was president of General Motors, among other companies.
Was he also in politics?
No, I wouldn't say so.
You're thinking Robert McNamara.
I was.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of people I knew who were president.
Yeah. I'm sure Motors, he was influential, but no, he wasn't a politician himself.
Okay. All right. Leave that out. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Peter in Glen Park.
Hi, Peter.
I got skunked on all my answers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries. It's a group effort. I do have a question, though.
Okay.
What was Francis Scott Key doing when he wrote the words for the national anthem?
Wasn't he watching the bombing of Fort McHenry?
Yes.
He was a prisoner on board a British ship.
No.
Oh, no.
He wasn't?
No.
No.
Oh, that's the story I had heard, too.
But he was on the ship, but he wasn't a prisoner?
He was on the ship. He was not a prisoner.
He was an observer.
Well, yes, he was observing.
Was he reporting?
No. He was working his profession.
He wasn't sous chef.
Sailor, was he?
I don't think he was a sailor, was he?
Wasn't a sailor.
No.
Working his profession. Fluffer. No, he wasn't a fluffer.
oh, my gosh.
So he was working his profession.
He was representing somebody.
He's a lawyer?
Yes.
Oh, no kidding.
Ah, I didn't know that. Very good.
And what was his client doing there?
Hmm. Was his client a prisoner?
Yes.
So his client was a prisoner aboard the British ship and was going to be tried for something or other?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Why was his client there?
Oh, I don't know. Can't go any further than that.
His client had objected to the British Army marching across his land to burn Washington.
Oh, interesting.
That's good.
And so was arrested.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Feel free to give us a call. The two numbers are area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. And something relatively short. Or are you going to hand something out?
Yeah. This is what I think we'll get. I think you'll get this.
Okay.
This is, there was a new movie about Churchill this week, and I was thinking about actors, different actors who have played the same real-life person. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples. So John Gavin and Rex Harrison each played the same historical character. In each case, these are real people. Catherine Keener and Sandra Bullock, second pair. Number three is three people, all of whom played the same person. John Cusack, Edward Norton, and Edward Herman. Number four is William Defoe and James Caviezel. Five is Laurence Olivier and Gregory Peck. And number six, my favorite, is Ray Liotta and D.B. Sweeney. I'll give you two each. John Gavin and Rex Harrison, Catherine Keener and Sandra Bullock, John Cusack, Edward Norton and Edward Herman. Number four is Willem Dafoe and James Caviezel, Laurence Olivier and Gregory Peck. And last is Ray Liotta and D.B. Sweeney.
I've got William Dafoe and James Caviezel as Jesus.
They did. Yeah, and The Last Temptation of Christ and The Passion of the Christ.
Jesus. very good. And let's see, Catherine Keener and Sandra Bullock both played Harper Lee.
They did. Remember the movies?
One is Capote and the other is not Capote. It's the one with that British actor.
Yeah, Toby
Jones.
Yeah, infamous.
Yeah.
Very good. So four more out and no any more?
Laurence Olivier and Gregory Peck both played General MacArthur.
They did.
Gregory Peck in MacArthur.
Correct.
And Laurence Olivier in a really awful movie called Inchon.
Correct. Very good.
Did D.B. Sweeney also play, what's his name, last name, Hill?
Henry Hill.
What about John Cusack, Edward Norton, Edward Herman? Were they among the Untouchables?
No, they weren't under.
Or not?
No.
Is that what I'm thinking of? No.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking the wrong
thing. Yeah, these aren't like the Elliot Ness crew.
Yes.
And Al Capone.
Okay. No.
All right.
Give it up. So John Gavin and Rex Harrison, John Cusack, Edward Norton, and Edward Herman, and the last pair is Ray Liotta and D.B. Sweeney, all played real-life people in the movies.
Okay. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Tom in Oakland.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have some guesses. So the last college needed, is that type of University of Texas?
Nope.
That's a good guess, though.
That is.
That's a good guess.
Oh, thanks. Shakespeare mothers. Yes. Is Hermione, this is a total guess, is that Desdemona's mother?
Nope. Not that I know of, anyway.
Shoot. Let's see. Some of the deathbed quotes. How about tomorrow at sunrise, I will no longer be here. How about Mark Twain?
No.
Is the certain butterfly quote, is that Nabokov?
It is Nabokov.
Oh, very good. That makes perfect sense.
He's turning up a lot today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Let's see, is the Mozart quote, is that Elvis Presley?
No. A little bit earlier, I think.
Would that it be so? Well, he could have said
that. let's see. The Coke and Colgate.
Yeah.
Question about the products. I'm going to guess that Coke had a toothpaste and Colgate had a soda.
Be such a good idea, but in neither case that I know of was that true.
No, shoot. Okay. All right. That's all the answers I have.
All right.
I do have some questions since it's Groundhog Day. I figured I'd ask some.
That's February 2nd.
Yeah.
You're just a few months off.
Oh, okay. Well, it's coming up.
Yeah.
Next year.
Next year. Yeah, go ahead.
Is it for Groundhog Day 2018?
Go ahead. No,
yeah,
go ahead.
It's about Groundhog Day, the movie. So
how many
days are actually depicted in Groundhog Day?
Go ahead.
Oh, and how many days are referenced in Groundhog Day?
Oh, referenced.
Also.
Well,
so how many actually are shown and how many are referenced?
So how many times does he wake up, right?
Okay, so only 2 days are shown. The main day that keeps getting repeated, and then at the very end he wakes up and it's the next day, February 3rd.
Actually I think 3 days are shown, because at the beginning I think it's the day before they leave.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. I thought it was early morning before they arrive in Punxsutawney, but I could be wrong there. But when you say how many days are referenced, are you talking about the number of times he went through the loop?
Yes. Yeah, in other words, how many days did Phil actually live?
Right. I don't know about the movie. I know in the book it's even longer. Like, it's like in the tens of thousands.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the book, he... Yeah, it's not nearly so funny a book as Bill Murray made it as a movie.
Yeah, and the book is not quite as...
Right. The movie, though, I mean...
It's loosely based on the novel, I would say.
Yeah, the movie you see only... I mean, you see under 100 times. I'm not sure how many they reference, though, because, you know, they don't... I think you get a feeling in the movie that you haven't seen all the days that Bill Murray's character has lived, so... I'll just say
right,
under 100.
Right, yeah, because like, say, Bill Murray, he talks about how he was killed so many different ways.
Right.
At one point, like, he's tried, and you don't see any of those. But
I think it's still under 100,
oh, it's
correct?
Way, it's way under 100.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 12.
No, according to an article I read, it was 414
Different
days referenced.
Oh, in the movie itself? Okay.
Yeah. All right. And then 38 different Groundhog Days actually shown.
Right.
Yeah, very
and
nice.
And then the screenwriter and... director Harold Ramis both estimated around 30 or 40 years
right.
for them. But one other question, I saw an interview with the screenwriter, and he mentioned that he had written a scene about how Bill Murray would track the number of days that he was actually in it.
Oh.
And I was wondering if it's not really a trivia question, but it wasn't shot, but... I was wondering, it was kind of an interesting idea of how Bill Murray, if every day resets, how could he keep track of how many days he was actually going along?
Yeah. No idea.
No idea. No
actually, there was a library, and he would go down and read one page a day of each book, start at the first book on the shelf and read one page every day.
That's nice.
All right.
That was kind of interesting. Anyway, thanks a lot. Great show.
All right, thank you. Ray Liotta and D.B. Sweeney, is that Shoeless Joe Jackson?
It is.
All right.
In Field of Dreams and Eight Men Out.
Right.
Very nice.
Okay.
You got a sports question.
Yeah, about
very
that.
Very nice, Dana.
A movie question.
It's a everybody's present for July 4th.
And Mozart, is that Mendelssohn?
No. But you're at least on the right letter now, too. So we've got a composer who's an M. I feel like you're going to get the right answer.
Mendelssohn. Meyerbeer.
Mendeleev.
Oh, Mahler.
Yes.
Mahler.
There you go.
That makes sense.
Mahler Bell. Says Mozart.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
All right.
And, all right. Let me do a quick question here. Well, this is July 4th weekend, so I have one Declaration of Independence question. The Declaration of Independence has left the Capitol on only two occasions. What were they?
The bicentennial?
No.
Really? Oh, was it when the Capitol was being burned down?
Did that is one of them.
Okay.
War of 1812, 1814, actually, when the Capitol was burned.
Where'd they take it?
That I don't know. It was, that it wasn't, they didn't say.
Okay, but not the bicentennial.
Jefferson's wine cellar, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's safe there.
So what was the other occasion when the Declaration of Independence was taken?
Was it a similar, like, emergency thing rather than a celebratory thing?
Yeah.
Was it World War II, maybe?
It was World War II.
Okay.
Very good. From 1942 to 1944, it was taken away. Where was it? Where did they keep it?
Was it that underground place that they carved out under some giant, there's a hotel in the mountain they've carved out?
Oh, you mean the Greenbrier in West Virginia? No, wasn't
okay.
that. Where did they
place?
Where did they take the Declaration of Independence? Yeah, it wasn't an old paint can in somebody's garage.
What about Fort Knox?
Fort Knox, yes.
Nice.
Very good. Okay. And... let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Christina in San Francisco.
Hi, Christina.
Some of my answers have already been given. But the name of a mother in Shakespeare, did you say it was Thaisia?
Thaisia, T-H-A-I-S-A.
Okay, yeah. Is that Juliet's mother?
It is not.
Okay. And then the Coke failure, if I understood the question correctly, was it Coke? Tried to have a chocolate Coke?
close, but it wasn't chocolate. They might have had it, but that's not the one they put in the Museum of Flavor Failure.
Mint?
Not mint.
Was it vanilla Coke?
Not vanilla. But we're circulating as soon as you say the... Because they have vanilla Coke.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get them as kids. I think they might even make it. This is one that sounds bad.
Huh.
And then one other just wild guess. Say, tomorrow I will be gone at sunrise. Is that by any chance Emily Dickinson?
No, it's
okay.
not.
Okay. I struck out. Okay, have a nice evening.
Thank you, though. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds of Your Matter.
Hi, it's Ed in Massachusetts.
Hi, Ed.
I think I might have a couple answers. You swiped my Joe Jackson. I had that.
Oh, too bad. Sorry.
Let's see. Phasia, have you gotten an answer on that one or not yet?
No.
She's from Pericles.
That's very correct.
Nice.
Pericles.
And my first guess, my first thought to cross my mind with Hermione was Midsummer Night's Dream, the sequel.
No.
You know, the morning after, she would be the mother of whoever she was the mother of. Mm. But she's actually the mother in A Winter's Tale.
That is correct. Very good.
So those are the answers I've got. And as for a question... you know what? I'm going to skip. It's kind of a lengthy one, and I'll call back next week.
I'll catch you
at the end of the hour tonight, so I'll save it for next time.
All right, Ed.
So
thank you.
I'm happy with my bell, and hope you guys have a nice 4th of July.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, Zeed. Very quickly, what is the best or largest number of copies of novel in the whole world history that sold over 500 million? What novel was it?
500 million.
Yeah. Let's keep it for next week. Because I have a very quick second question. Despicable Adolf Hitler was so much fascinated with Nefertiti that he kept a portrait of her on his nightstand. But he also was fascinated with her husband, Akhenaten, the first man to call for monotheism, and his despicable Nazi symbol, the cross twisted. He also had part of Akhenaten symbol. I'll give you that because it is actually the spread wing eagle. But the other part is he actually called Akhenaten started a new city in Egypt called Amarna. Hitler was so fascinated by this man, he started a new city in Germany. What was the name of the city? We'll leave it for next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, time to clean up here, Kira.
All right, got some quotes. Tomorrow at sunrise, I will no longer be here, is Nostradamus. Pardonnez-moi, monsieur. That is Marie Antoinette. She accidentally stepped on the foot of the guy, the guillotine.
Very good, very good.
This is No Way to Live is, of course, Groucho Marx. I love you very much, my dear Beaver. That was to Simone de Beauvoir. That is Jean-Paul Sartre.
That's right. He used to call her Beaver.
Yeah. Behold, O monks, etc. That is Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha.
I wouldn't have gotten that.
All right. And then, what else did I have? The last college was Union College, attended by Chester Arthur and Jimmy Carter. And, I think I had one
John,
more.
Okay. John
Wait a minute. Jimmy Carter went to the Naval Academy.
He went to two things, I think.
Did he really?
But yeah, Union College.
Okay.
And then the businessman, inventor, and former president of General Motors. That was Pierre DuPont.
John Gavin and Rex Harrison played Julius Caesar. John Cusack, Edward Norton, and Edward Herman played Nelson Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. Coke had coffee-flavored Coke.
Nope.
And Colgate made beef lasagna frozen dinner.
No.
The Mark Hamill rule is about protecting merchandise, that it gets authenticated if it's worth more than $5. Pocahontas rule was if anybody had any Native American blood, they were considered black. There are so many Virginians that had that claimed Pocahontas as a relative that the exemption was if that was their claim, they were considered to be white. That was the exemption.
The only Shakespeare mother nobody got, Cecily Neville, that's the Duchess of York and Richard III. I think that's it for me. If we didn't get your call, I do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you enjoyed the show. Our panel tonight, Kira Pace, Lori Fisher. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. Our thanks to David Latulipe for handing the board and phones. And above all, our thanks to you for taking the time to tune in and call. And have a great week, everybody. And happy 4th of July. Take care. Bye-bye.
One way or the other, if it ain't full, it's blank. If you don't spend, you bank. If it ain't bean, it's frank.